Good morning, world. Today's daf from Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Chet. And we're holding by Omar Rabbi Asi Arba'a Kavim Moach. So we had discussed yesterday the tefillin that were found. This was talking about in the second Beis HaMikdash and the story of Beitar. Now we're moving on to something that was in the first Beis HaMikdash, as we'll see, because it's a reference to Bovel. We found four kavim of human brains on one stone. Ula omar tisha kavim. Omar of Kanavi Temar Shila Bar Mori. Where do we see it in a pasuk that there's a remez? Because it says, Bat Bavel HaShedudah. Ashrei Sheyishalem Lach Gmulecha Asher Gamalt Lanu. Ashrei Sheyochez V'Nipetzet Olalayach El Hasala. So you see over here, that we say in the Tehillah, specifically, we're talking to Bat Bavel and giving Shevach to those that would pay back Bavel, which is a reference to Daryovesh, to those who came to destroy Bavel, that they should do the same to Bavel that Bavel did to us. Yishalem lach gmul lech asher gamalt lanu. What is that gmul? Happy are those that will be zeichet to smash your babies against the rock. So in other words, we're talking about for the way that the Bnei Bovel had done the same thing to Bnei Tzion. Bnei Tzion ha'yikarim ha'mesulaim b'paz. So what exactly does mesulaim b'paz mean? I mean, it might mean, yeah, I mean, paz is this very valuable gold. And it doesn't mean mesulaim in the sense of v'chapi b'fiza, that they actually had covered themselves up with gold. I mean, how could it mean that? Gavi, stop looking at the camera. Keep your eyes on the road. So does it mean that they were covered with gold? The army devei Rabbi Shila tarte mitakli astiri pisa nochus biyama. B'sach hakol, the entire planet Earth has all of two Easterot, one of which the Romans control, and one of which is for the rest of the world. So how in the world could it mean mesulaim b'paz to be literally covered in gold? Of this particular type of mineral. Mesulaim means that it's beyond an ability to actually describe, so because it was beyond the beauty of Paz itself. Mikora, because we know exactly what used to go on. Mikora, Chashiva de Romai Havinakte Buyuni de Gushpanko Mashamshi Arsayu. So these Romans, what they used to do is they used to have pornography before they would have sexual relations, so to turn them on, and they wanted to have beautiful children, and they figured if they had something really beautiful to look at, that was the belief, if someone looked at something beautiful before copulating, so then the children that he would have would be beautiful. So they used to have these Playboy figurines on their rings. So they would look at their rings before sleeping with their women. Mikan ve'elech, but after the Churban, they saw that the things that they had that they thought were beautiful were not beautiful. So they would take Jewish children, tie them to their beds, and keep them there so that they should have beautiful children. So then that was even more choshev than their beautiful rings. So one kid who was disgusted by this whole thing, and he was tied to a Roman bed, he says to another kid, where the Torah writes about all these horrible things that are going to happen to Klal Yisrael. Where does it say this in the Torah? This is awful. So the other one told him, it says, Gam kocholi v'chol maka shalokatu b'sefer ha-Torah hazeh, that even things that are not written beferish in the Torah, Ya'aleim Hashem alecha ad yishmadech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring them upon you. That's where it says it. So the first one said, wait, I haven't gotten to that. I'm only in the first grade, so I didn't get to that pasuk yet. How much further do I have to go till I get to that pasuk? You must have read ahead, because we were in the same Zilberman shir. So the guy says, the other kid says, no, it's like the next page. But, you know, I looked ahead. Oh, my lady, Inke, it's just like a little bit. Pusto Paga, it's one more page and a half. I said the other kid, if I had gotten to there, I wouldn't have had to ask you. I would have figured that out myself. I mean, it's just that I hadn't learned the pasuk. Think you're such a big shot. Omer of Yud, things haven't changed. Omer of Yud, Omer Shmuel, Mishum, Rabbi Shimon, Ben Gamliel. My dichtiv. Eini olalana nafshi, mikol benotiri. So what is this reference? What is it referring to? To what event in anything that happened anywhere else? This is referring to Beitar. Where there are bamiot bateken esiot or you bekrach beitar bekolachat vechata yabar bamiot melam de tinokot bekolachat vechata yelofen of arbamiot tinokot shor beit rabban. This is all the getter of arbamiot is often used just like shalosh meot is in terms of certain types of things. In terms of people, we often find arbamiot that is written, and the arbamiot over here obviously is not literally arbamiot, but there are 400. But the Knesset, each one of them had an enormous number of Malamde Tinokos, and the Shiurim, each one of these schools, had 400 kids. V'kishayahu Yev Nichnas L'sham, Hayadokrino Tan B'chutrehem. So that when the Romans would come in there, and they didn't have the power yet over them, so the Talmidim used to have fun stabbing all of these goyim that would come around there. Then, just like today, if the Arabs walk through a Zilberman, they're in big trouble, you know? So they would stab them with their sticks that they used in the school. The Kishikavaro Yevel Chadum. But then, when the Romans were misgaber over the city of Beitar, they wrapped up these kids in this svarim that they were using to learn, and they burnt them. Mitzitum Be'esh. Tun Rabbana. There was a mite. Yes. Yeah. It's very possible. It's very interesting. There's a whole pirish that's brought from, unfortunately, most of it was lost. But Rav Avram ben Arambam speaks about this. But he doesn't make that connection. But yeah, in Achinami, it's a beautiful point. Tun Rabbanan, Maisib Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Shalach Lichrach Gadol Sheberomi. And the people there in Rome told him that, listen, we don't know who it is, but there is this absolutely gorgeous kid that's in jail here in Rome. And he is Yifei Naim. He's so beautiful. Tovroi. He's got these gorgeous curls. Kvutzotav Sturotlo Taltalim. This kid has got to be something special. Cholach V'yomad Al Pesach Beta Asurim. It's a very interesting Gemara because it makes an equivalence between his beautiful appearance and his godless. So you remember Rav Schlanger, I once told Rav Barnea, Rav Schlanger, he reported that in Slabodka, that the first consideration about whether to accept a bocher in Slabodka was how beautiful he was. The more beautiful he was, the more likely it was to be accepted. So as the Gemara points out, that physical appearance is part of the expression of the internal godless of another. So Rabbi Yeshua, when he heard this, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya went and he stood by the door of that jail, and he shouted out, this was done, you know, was done by Rabbi Silver, the same thing after the Second World War, Hashem Yirachem, exactly the same thing that he did. He would walk into these Nazi camps, and he would shout out a pasuk and say, Shema Yisrael, and see if anybody would answer, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad.
The Christian orphanages who claimed that there were no Jews.
Yeah, claimed there were no Jews, right. So he would shout out Shema Yisrael, and then the Jewish kids would answer. So what do you mean there's no Jewish kids? So here he made Al Pesach was present. He must have gotten the idea, Mamish, from this story of Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. I mean, the common horrors that the Gemara describes in the Churban that are just mamish so recent and push it within the lifetimes of people living now, exactly the same things. It's horrifying. So he stood at the door and he shouted the first half of the pasuk, Mina Tanlim Shisa Yaakov Yisrael Bozazim. So that kid heard that and he shouted out back, Halo Hashem zu chatanu lo, v'lo avu b'drachav aloch, v'lo shamu b'torato. So he said, oh, so this is a kid obviously from Zilberman, if he knows the whole pasuk b'al peh. So Amar, muftachani bo shemora o Rabbi Yisrael. This kid is going to end up becoming a gadol ador. Avodah, I swear, Eini Zaz Mikan, I'm not going to leave this spot until I get him out of jail. Achiv, Denu B'chol Mokom Sheposkim, whatever they ask for him, I'm going to buy him. Amru Lo Zozo Mishom HaChepodo B'Momon Arbi and Rebbe Yishuv B'Chananya actually didn't leave there until he was able to be paid to that kid. And in fact, Lo Ayu Yamim Vatim HaChorau Rabbi Yisrael, and his name is Rabbi Yishmael Ben Elisha, not probably the grandson of the Kohen Gadol. Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Maaseh, this is the famous Maaseh that we write a kina about. Maaseh Bivno Bibitosh Rabbi Yishmael Ben Elisha Shenishbu L'Shnei Adonim. And Liyamim Nizdav Gushneim B'Makom Echad. And these two people, one of them had bought a son and one of them had bought a daughter, and they were just as beautiful as this Rabbi Yishmael Ben Elisha, the child. So Zeomer, so one says, one guy says to the other, I bought myself an Eved, who is the most gorgeous person I ever saw in my life. And this one says, I bought myself a Shivcha, the most gorgeous woman I ever saw in my life. Why don't we get them together and we'll split the kids? Who knows, these kids are going to be gorgeous. So Ichnisum Lecheder, and Ze Yoshev Bekeren Zavizeh, Vezo Yoshva Bekeren Zavizeh. Each one of them, they put them in this dark room, each one of them is saying, Ani Kohen Ben Kohanim Gedolim, I should marry a Shivcha, what are they crazy? Zoto Merat Ani Kohenet Bat Kohanim Gedolim, Ina Sela Evet, each one thought the other one was an Evet. Ubochu Kol HaLayla, they cried the entire night. Given Shalom Uda Shachar, there was enough light for them to see who they were. They saw, this is my sister, this is my brother. Ikiru Zed Zeh, They fell on each other, cried their eyes out until they died in sorrow. So this is a reference to Maisim like this. Another Maisim, Reish Lakish, there was a Maaseh B'Shachat, and her name was Tzofnat Bat Peniel. And they called her that. Tzofnat is because wherever she would walk, people would stop and look. It was impossible not to look at her. And that's why Tzofnat is a lashon of hakol tzofim biyofya. Everybody would stare at her. And she was called Bat Peniel, Bito Shel Kohen Gadol Sheshimesh Lifnai V'Lifnim. So she was also Bas Kohen Gadol. And she nit alal ba shabai kol alayla. It was this Nazi who raped her a whole night. The next day, he puts on these seven beautiful dresses, and he takes her out to the slave market to sell her. It was this incredibly disgusting, ugly person who goes over there. He says, I want to buy her, but I want to see how beautiful she is. So the Nazi says to him, you reka, you idiot, you want to buy, buy. I'm telling you, there's nothing like her in the whole world. A guy like you should sit here and start worrying about whether she's beautiful enough for you. So this disgusting guy says, Afal Pekin, listen, if I'm gonna give you all this money, I want to see what I'm buying. So Yivshita Shishachaluki. So this guy starts taking off her clothes. She should be walking around naked. He takes off the first six dresses. The seventh dress, she tears off of herself. And she rolls around in the dust. Amra lefanav, she says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Im aleinu lo chasta, you can't have rachamim on us. Can't you have rachamim on the Kedushas Hashem? Such a chilul Hashem. HaKedush HaShimcha HaGibor, lama lo tachus? And this is what Yirmiyahu was referring to. Batami chigri sak v'itpalshi ba'efer. Roll around in ashes and cover yourself in sack. Evel yachida silach mispat tamrurim. So this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice, Batami speaking. Ki pitom yavo hashodeid aleinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's not... The Shodeid is not coming against you. It's coming against me and you, against us. Kivayachol alai ve'alayich b'Shodeid. This chilul Hashem that she was sensitive to. That's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying in advance. That this is what he was suffering from. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Maidich Tiv. So, I'll give you an example from Micha of what we're talking about over here, of the horrors before the Churban, that brought about the Churban. Va'ashku gever uvito, the ish v'nachalato. Look what they do to crush a man and his home, a man even with what everything that he has as his own inheritance. This, I'll give you an example. Ma'aseh ba'adam echad. There was this guy who was an apprentice to this carpenter, and he fell in love with this guy's wife. So ma'aseh ba'adam echad, the apprentice falls in love be'eshet rabo. He was a shulya denagri. When we say rabo, we don't mean rabo b'teira. We mean the person who was training him. So he was learning computer programming by this guy, and he falls in love with his wife. So one time the guy, the trainer, needed money, needed some cash. So the Shulya Denagre said to him, send your wife over to my apartment and I'll give her the cash. He sends his wife over to the apartment and he keeps her for 3 days making out with her. So the guy comes. He comes, Kadamu Ba'atzla. He comes and he says, where's my wife? So, Ishtisha Shigarti Lach, Hechani. Amarlo, I have no idea. She came here, rang the bell. I gave her the cash, and she left. Ani Patartila Alter. I heard rumors that there was this woman that she fell in with some kids, and they were misbehaving. And I didn't think it was her. Now I realized it must have been her. So the guy, the teacher, says to him, oh my God, so what should I do? On my loan, look, I know it's very hard for you to accept this, but if you listen to me, I can tell you, I mean, the rumors were pretty tough. I mean, she was going after all of these kids. Listen to my Yitzhak, give her a get. So the teacher says to him, I can't afford to give her a get. You know how much I wrote her in her ksuva? On my loan, you know what, I'll give you a loan, and you'll be able to pay the ksuva. So he went ahead, and he divorced her. And of course, this guy went, and he marries her. And it came time to pay him back for the loan for the ketuvah. So given she gives manu v'lahayala l'foro, so the guy said, okay, you know what? You can't afford to pay the ketuvah. Come and be my butler, and we'll take the money off from what you owe me. And there she was. They are sitting and eating and drinking and having fun. And this teacher was needed to be Eimed Umashke Alehem. He's the one that's giving them food and giving them drink at the table, and tears are falling from his eyes, falling into the cups. And because of that, that was the moment that they signed in the Shamayim the Gzardin against Yerushalayim. And some say, others say, because of the 2 weeks, remember, it's an Eishes Ish, that nobody said anything, you know. This guy goes, gets away with this, and nobody says anything. There's a guy making out with someone's wife, and everybody knows it. And that's when the Gzardin was signed. Okay, let's get back now to the dinim of the Sikri Kon. So remember, you buy from the Sikri Kon, then we assume that the person was never maskim to the sale, and therefore, initially, you'd have to give it back. And they made the takona. In the end, we had Rebbe's takona that you pay 25% and you're allowed to keep it. So let's first describe when exactly we are allowed to assume we have an umdana that this guy had never agreed to the sale. Remember, the Sikri Kon is the owner. The owner was forced because he was terrified. He gave the goy the property. And now this person who brought it from the goy goes back to the original owner and he says, listen, I bought the property from the goy. I want you to sign off on it. Is it okay if I'm konet? So he gets this guy's permission. We don't believe that this permission is real. So Amar Rav, when do we say that? That's only lo shanu ala da Amar lo leichaseku kni. So if the person didn't write anything, all he did was he said, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, make a chazaka on this karka. Then we assume that this idea is he wants this person to have it so that he should be able to now sue this person in court. But if he actually wrote out a shtar for him, so then he does get the right to keep the land. Because it must mean, if he had kedekach, he wrote out a shtar, that he really recognized that there's no other way he's going to get this land anyway. So he wants a Jew to have it. Reb Shmuel says, no, a shtar doesn't prove anything either. The only way that it would prove that he really 100% wants this to work is achi chtov lo achrayut. If he writes in the shtar that if anybody takes away this land from him, that he, the original owner, is mitchayev to compensate him for his loss, then it's mamish a normal mechiras karkos. Tani kavasi d'Shmuel, and there's a brisa that actually says this, apparently. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, we had the same thing for someone who's kena from a wife. He's kona from the woman that she is mevateret on the liens that she has against her husband's property, and now he wants to buy that property from the husband. So he pays the woman 10 cents on the dollar, 1 cent on the dollar, whatever it is, that she gives up on her lien. So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, lakach min ha'isha, v'chazar v'lakach min ha'ish. So if he first bought it from her, then he buys from the husband. So then she can't say, I only did this because I knew my husband would be so angry if I messed up his sale. So then mikho kayam. But if first he bought it from the husband, the cause of a lakach min ha'isha, and then he buys the lien, then mikho batel, unless she writes out achrayut, achet tichtov lo achrayut, that she is mekabelet on herself, that if the land that he's buying is taken by someone that her husband owns money for, she will compensate. That's exactly what Shmuel was saying, that we don't take stam writing up a shtar as being meaningful unless she writes achrayas nechasi. So the Chora is saying exactly what Shmuel is saying. So if that's the case, it seems to be a tiyufta on Rav, because Rav says the shtar itself is sufficient. You don't need to have achrayas nechasi. So name it Avi Tiyuf to the Rab. Is this indeed such a proof of Rab that it shows that he was wrong? Amar Lachol Rav, no, not at all. Because, I mean, listen, what do you think it means? Why in the world would she accept that Rayut on herself for a loan that was due against her husband? So she's going to say, I'm going to get, that doesn't make sense, Bichlal. And that's not what it means in this case. In this case, when it says Achrayut, it means that she gave the shtar. That's all that it means. The reason that it's called achrayut is because the shtar makes it absolute. So this shtar makes it absolute. If she tries to change her mind and she says, no, I only wrote it to make my husband happy and so on, so why'd you write a shtar? Which is what I say, what Rav says. Doesn't mean achrayut nechasim on the loan, which is very unreasonable to say anyway, don't you think? Okay, so now let's take a look at the dinim. Because it's very interesting, when we get into the question of keeping land that was bought from a sikriko. Now remember that there are several issues that are involved where it is that we believe that the passage of time will make a difference towards our psak din as to whether a purchase was a legal purchase or not. So the first thing that we had learned over here was this idea of being 12 months in the hand of a sikrikon, and the owner didn't do anything to bring him to court, and then you buy it after those 12 months, and you pay your 25%. That was the takon at the end, according to Rebbe, that if it was a year, and the guy never did anything to get it away from him during that year, and then you give him 25%, so then you have a right to keep it, even if the guy comes to you and gives you back the money, and he says, here's the money you paid the sikrikon, I want my field back. If he hadn't done anything for 12 months, you can keep it. That was the takona of Rebbe. Now, remember that there's a general issue, which is, when do you have to present to a court proof of purchase, right? That's the general halacha called a chazoka, not anything to do with sikrikon, a case where you have normal business going on, and you don't have a shtar. You lost your shtar. So somehow a guy comes along, you've been in a property for 5 years, 3 years, 10 years, As long as you've been there for 3 years, if you say, listen, I bought this property free and clear, I'm going through all my stuff, I can't find a shtar, there was a fire at the bank, and I had it in a safe deposit box, whatever, you're not mechuyev to show a shtar. Why? Because we have what's called chazaka on karka. So that if somebody did not complain, there was no micha'a, there's no complaint for 3 years about what are you doing in this property, you can't suddenly appear after 3 years go by and say, hey, why have you been in my property? You never bought it from me. So why didn't you ever say anything? So a person is only mechuyev to be shomer shtara for 3 years. Now, the question is, does he need a taina with it? Of course. He can't say, I'm staying here because you never said anything. So I never said anything. So I'm a nice guy. Now I'm saying something. Get the heck out of my karka. Obviously, that's still true. The idea of a chazaka on karka is only chazaka with a taina. Now, the question is, if somebody has property for the sikri kun, he can only keep that property from the original owner if he paid that sikri kun and he paid the owner. Remember, if he never backed up his purchase with the 25% payment to the owner, then the owner can recoup his property. So now the question is, does he need that taina, or is that taina a given? So let's consider a case where somebody buys from a sikri kun, and he had 3 years that he used it, and the owner was there. The owner could have said, hey, man, you never paid me my 25% for this karka after you bought it from the sikri kun. He never said that. Okay, now this guy goes, and he sells it to another person. Now, this other person has no idea about whether the original buyer from the sikri kun had given the 25% compensation or not. So if the person himself had said, what do you mean? Of course I paid you your 25%. Where's your contract? I don't have a contract, but I have the fact that I have my taina that I paid you 25%. Why didn't you say anything? It's 3 years. Why did you never say anything? So obviously, he's believed the same way you would normally have a chazak on karka. But now the second guy to whom he sells it, this is the third guy, right? This is the original owner. Fourth guy, you could say, if you include the sikri kun, the original owner, sikri kun steals it. The next guy comes along, buys it for the sikri kun, eats it shalashanim, sells it to a fourth person, a Jew. So now the owner is saying that I want proof. Because I'm telling you, this guy never gave me my 25%, and I have a right to take my property. So in this case, ein lebaalim alokeach sheni klum, the second buyer, meaning the fourth person in this story, does not have to prove that the original buyer from the sikri kun made his 25% payment according to the takanas chachomi. So now, what's going on over here? Tell me what the case is. Here's he done. Idikagayin v'omer minoch zavna. Are we talking about where this guy, the second one to buy, the fourth person in the story? So he says, I know for a fact that the first guy bought it from you, paying you your 25%. I mean, so then if he has that taina, then the fact that it was sold to him is irrelevant, isn't it? I mean, the first guy who bought it for the sikri kun would have been able to say exactly the same thing. I bought it from you. I've been here for 3 years. You never said anything. So afilo rishonami, the first guy would be believed without any proof. And therefore, there would be no point in a brisa saying that the second person was the one to say this. Even the first person would be allowed to say it. Afilo rishonami. And if the second guy says, I don't know. I just bought it from the guy. I assumed it was his. I have no idea whether he paid you or not. So then even the second guy should have to now pay up, give up the karka, because he has no right to it. Because I can't tell you that it was legally purchased from you, you know? So either I give it back, or maybe I can make the 25%. But he certainly can't get away with it. So I feel a shiny namilo. So how do you, what is the point of a braita discussing a case where number one purchaser from the sikri kun had a chazaka shalashanim, But number two, somehow or other changes the law. How would it change the law? Rav Shea says, I'll tell you why. It would absolutely change the law. Yeah, let's say we're talking about a case with this guy who bought it. Number two, buyer from the buyer of the secret coin. He has no idea whether the original guy bought it or not. So he's there without a taina. If you have a chazaka without a taina, so then it doesn't give you anything. But if the first guy had said, I don't know, then of course he would have had to give it back. But if the second guy says, I don't know, then kagon zeh, we have the din of toanim liyoresh, the toanim lelokeach. Remember that we have a concept of ptach picha liyaleim. Open the mouth in a court of somebody who has no idea of what his taina is. So in this case, let's say that the guy would have died. Now somebody comes to his heir. Now it's 5 years after his father bought the property, right? And they say to the Yorish, you know, your father never paid for this property. We want it back. The Yorish says, I don't know. He was there for 5 years. You never said anything. I never said anything because I like him. And he's a friend of mine. I didn't want to embarrass him, but he never paid me. Do you know that he paid me? No, I don't know anything. I'm just an heir. In that case, the Beis Din says, we assume that he had bought it. The same thing should be true when somebody sells it to someone else and then he offs from the scene. The Beis Din should tie up for the lokeach as well. So therefore, in this case, if the first buyer from the secret coin had said, well, nobody ever said anything, then obviously he would be forced now to give it back to the original owner. Or maybe to pay the 25%. But since he sold it to somebody else, and that somebody else had no way of knowing, so then the court is going to make the assumption that there was a taina, and they make the taina. And that's why we talk about the second guy, because idach, if the first one would have said that, and he hadn't sold it, so then obviously only if he says, I paid, itain, then we believe him. But if he himself is not making a taina that he paid, why the heck should the fact that he's been there for 5 years make any difference at all? If he doesn't say he paid for it, so then we take it away from him. Fine. Now, this is benogea, a sikrikon, con, a technical sikrikon. Technical sikrikon means that you, the seller to the sikrikon, was terrified and the pressure was pressure of being shot and killed by this Nazi. Obviously, the question was, how high the pressure was, and that's what the Mishnah was saying. If you could kill a Jew with impunity, so then we didn't give it a din of secret cone because we said the guy really wanted to save his life and he was happy to give away the land, so it would be a case of Talino Vizavit. Yeah, wow. So at least I've got, you know, a few people to talk to over here. It would be nice to have a minion. What can you do? Well, look at this. All of a sudden, names turn into real people. Oh my gosh. So slow. What did you gain from not being there and sharing yourself? What, you think it's a one-way thing? Is that the point? Learning is a one-way thing. So you could see me, but I don't have to see you. As if there's nothing that goes in directly between two people. I don't understand you guys. I, Mamish, do not understand what this is. What is the Mila? All right, listen. Maybe people are hungry and they're eating cereal along with Richie. I mean, you know, that kind of thing I can understand. But that's just for a little while. I mean, how long can Richie eat cereal, for heaven's sakes? Hi, Richie. And I understand some people are sitting there, you know, broiling meat, maybe. Other people are fixing computers, maybe. Other people are with their Hasidim. They've got hundreds of Hasidim in front of them. They don't want to show off by putting it on them. I understand that kind of thing. Nice to see you, Mordechai. Okay. And other people are driving, so I can understand that. Alrighty. So now let's talk about the question of sikrikon, where there is not a real danger of being killed by a Nazi. So we got extremes. One extreme is killing Jews with impunity. And there we feel that the guy would have actually wanted to give away his property. Then we have obviously the other extreme is where there is no fear of being murdered, but there may be fear of other things, which we'll talk about. And then we have, in the middle, we have identity recon, where, technically speaking, it's feasible to ultimately go to court and to get back the property that was stolen from you. And there's no impunity for killing Jews, but it sure is not the place where you want to be on a street in Harlem when the guy's telling him to give you your wallet. I mean, it's not impunity, but chances are you get killed anyway. So because of that, we have our special identity recon. Now, let's imagine a case where there's no real fear of not being able to recover things. So let's say you have a guy who takes your land because you owe money. Or he takes your land, stam, machbat anparot. Anparot means he just wants to walk away with it, you know, for free. But it's not a time of sikrikon. So in that case, ein bo mishum sikrikon, if you go ahead and you buy it, we have no reason to assume that the real owner was Meichel and he gave it away. And there's no din of sikrikon. You have to give it back to the original owner. There's no concept over here. If the guy was not under duress, so what right did you have to take it away from him? The question may be you might have to pay back for the money of the loan. That, yes. In other words, if you paid the guy $100,000, the guy says, well, this guy owed me $100,000. So then if he wants to compensate, if he wants to take back the karka from you, you basically saved him the $100,000 by paying the guy. So somebody rishonim taina, that you can demand compensation for. Fine. That's a side point. But the din of sikrikon certainly does not apply in this case. Now, in the case of anparot, where somebody steals it without any basis, you need to keep it for 12 months. What are you talking about? Did you not just say, did I hear you say there's no din of sikrikon? So what's this 12 months jazz? 12 months is a din of sikrikon. That din of 12 months, if you recall, was the halacha that if 12 months went by and the guy did not buy it back, so then the buyer doesn't have to give it back to you if you're ready to pay him, but he has to only give you the 25%. But you said that that does not apply unless there was threat of death. And you said there's no sikrikon b'anparot. Then you go ahead 2 seconds later and you say that on parot you need 12 months. Something is wrong. You said ein bo mishum sikrikon. No, there's a mistake. Okay, come on. The Braisa is saying that anparot ein bo mishum sikrikon. But even sikrikon itself is not that simple. Sikrikon atzma is also still going to need 12 months. So the Braisa, the last piece, was not talking about anparot. It was saying, since we said there's no din of sikrikon, I just want to point out to you that even the din of sikrikon requires 12 months. That was part of the takana, remember? So what we have here is a lot of different interrelated halachas that developed over time, remember? So first we had the period during the milchama itself where there was no sikrikon. That the Mishnah said, lo haya sikrikon b'Yehuda, because the goyim were actually paying people to kill Jews. And over there, if you could get away with your life by giving away the land, so then that was for sure real. Then when they made an ostensible legal system, the Roman legal system, so then he knows that he can get it back. So then we don't have that umdana that he meant to let it go because it was tolu v'zav. And he didn't mean to let it go. He meant essentially to take it back in the courts or when he gets enough money to buy it back because now things are legal. So then, if you buy it from the goy during 12 months, this guy is given 12 months, the original owner is given 12 months to get his money, to be able to buy it back, or to get his lawyers to be able to tackle it in court. And so during 12 months, you had no right to assume that you can keep it. And if he comes to you after you bought it, and he says, listen, I didn't have time to get my money together, now I have money and I want it back. So then you have to give it back to him. But if the 12 months pass and the guy never does anything about it, and then you went ahead and bought it from the sikrikon, so then we had that final takana, remember, from Rebbe, pay 25%, and you don't have to give it back to the guy even when he gets his money back. Mashenkin, if you had bought it before the 12 months, Even if he comes years later and wants to buy it back from you, you had no right to buy it from the Secretcon permanently. Those were the original takanas of Secretcon. Then we have this additional idea of anperot or bechov. Over there, we do not have an umdana that the guy was meichel, and it was a case of teluah of his oven. And in that case, if you bought it, so then you do not get the rights to demand anything in exchange, unless, of course, it was taken for a chov, and you covered the chov for him. That's possible. Even that's a machlokas, remember, because it's not so poshut when you pay up a chov for someone else that it isn't hiniach mozav al karenatzvi. But okay, that's not a sugya for getting over here. Now, in this case, where we have, this basically wraps up our many different issues, including, don't forget, the issue of a chazak of shalosh shanim and the difference between having a taina or not having a taina, and having a taina or not having a taina when you are a lokeach or a yoresh, in either the case of the sikrikon or in the case of a regular din of karka. So here is an interesting case, which apparently first struck people as being similar to sikrikon. And this, you have to get a little bit of background on the norms of tax collection at the time of the Gemara. So what the government used to do, it would put a tax on a village, or it would put a tax on a particular agricultural county, an entire valley. It did not want the hassle of individual tax collection. So that's what we always have, the mochsim, right? So they would give people the right to collect taxes. The time of the Gemara that we're talking about over here, they simply gave a tax bill to a municipality, or they gave a tax bill to a county of the valley where all of the Sadais were. That was their agricultural land. So what the people would do, the locals would do, is they would get together, form a local tax-paying government, meaning so they would have a little committee. They would appoint some guy that he would be the one that would negotiate the taxes and pay the taxes. And then they would prorate the land according to the people that were there. Obviously, not just the size of the land, but the productivity of the land. So this only the locals could really do fairly. And they would give a tax bill of the relative percentage that each owner had for the land that was his. And that person would pay up to the person who was in charge. And that's how they handled it. Fine. Now, if one guy would disappear before the tax season and he went away, didn't show up when it was time to pay taxes, never put his money in, so then the deal was that if somebody steps forward among the other people, somebody steps forward to pay this guy's taxes for him, meaning not directly to the government, but into the local council, so then that person would have the right to utilize his sada. And even if the guy came back, this guy could keep that sada for that year that he paid the taxes for. So now this gentleman, Gidel Bariali, he was Mekabel Arab Taska Mibnei Baga. The name of the tax was Taska. That was the tax on real estate. And he agreed that he's going to pay this guy's taxes. And what he did was, is he paid 3 years of taxes in advance. Now, the problem is that the government gave the tax bill according to the owners that are there at the time. If the government sees a new opportunity, fresh meat, a new guy goes ahead and buys a sada, they send somebody out there, wait a minute, the old guy, he paid, he's gone. Where's your piece of the action, baby? So they give the new tax bill based on this guy, right? So now Gidel Bariali, he pays up 3 years worth of taxes. The owner comes back, and he wants it back. He's back after the first year. So Gidel Bariali says, yeah, but I'm sorry, buddy, but I get to keep your property for 3 years. And nobody asked you to pay 3 years in advance, he says to Gidel Bariali. I mean, I'm taking my property back. You put your money out there for 3 years. That was just larceny. I'm going to have to pay the taxes anyway, so why should I worry about compensating you for your 3 years? You should never have paid 3 years. So he was Akim V'yoy V'zuzi T'tlatshinin, and in the end, the guy comes back at the end of the first year, L'sof Atam Havata Kamoy, and he says to Gidel, look, you know, the first year that you pay taxes, I don't have to pay you for that because you used my field. That was the deal, right? So all of the field that you grew, all of the tour that you grew on my field, that's fine. Now I'm going to move back into my field. I'm going to have to pay the new tax bill. And you don't have any right to my field. So this Gidel Bariali goes to Rav Papa and he says, listen, I paid this guy's taxes for 3 years. I was supposed to get the right to eat the field for 3 years. So Rav Papa thought that sounded reasonable. So he was going to write him a tirfa b'nei banka. He was going to write him a tirfa. Tirfa is a right to collect. And that he should be able to go, Rashi learns this means literally, that he should be able to go after the people in the town council, the ones that were in charge of this whole thing. Yeah, Tosva says, well, what, it's not their business. I mean, if it ended up in the government hands, so then he can only sue this guy himself. Why would he go after the council? That was just the groma. So Amalei Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yishula Rav Papa. So Rav Huna points out to Rav Papa, if you do that, essentially what are you doing? You are protecting this Gidel Bariali. You are protecting him the way that someone would buy from a secret cone. That's what you're saying. You're saying the government is essentially a secret cone. They're a bunch of robbers. And anybody who pays them up has a right to the land that he bought from them. And he doesn't have to suffer any kind of loss. Where do you get that from? Because there is certainly no such halacha. We just showed that money that's paid for a chov or money that's paid by an parot is definitely not considered to be the equivalent of sikri kon. So in Cain, if you're going to give him a shtar tirfa, then you're giving him exactly the same guarantees that the takonas give to someone who bought from a sikri kon. Where's the sikri kon? Well, the government's a sikri kon. Ela amr v'nebred rev Yeshua. This Gidel Bariali is out his dough. Nobody asked him to pay up, and he's not given any kind of protection. If you like to throw your money out by tying it to the horn of a deer and saying, what a nice, secure place for my money, go right ahead. That's not our problem. That's exactly what you did. So basically, as the Mishnah said, Zo Mishnah Rishona, but the Beis Din Shel Achareihem said that Halokeach min ha-sikri kon has to pay 25%, because otherwise what's going to happen is people are not going to buy and the goyim are going to end up owning the land of Eretz Yisrael. It's a disaster. If they buy and people are ready, then we assume that the sikri kon made a deal with him to buy it cheap so he can get rid of it. He can move it quickly. Normally they take off 25%. Let him pay that 25% to the owner. Now, the question is, as you know, we always have this issue, and it's an issue that you run into all the time when you're making sales in a store. The sale says 25% off, but what does that mean? 25% off of the value, 25% off in terms of what is actually paid in the end? In other words, is it 20% of the final price? So you got it for a fifth cheaper, or you actually got it for 25% cheaper? That's the difference between when we talk about the chomesh. Remember, you have to add a chomesh if you're the bailin and you're being paid at. How do we figure that chomesh? Is it 1/5 of the total, including what you're paying, which means it's 1/4 of the original, plus the chomesh, which is now a total of 5/4, which means that it's 1/5 of the total payment, or is it 1/50 of the original value? That's the question. So that's called chomesh milabar or chomesh milagab. This is the machlokes that we have over here now between Rav and Shmuel. So Rav says, look, you can pay this up either in karka or in cash. And when it says 1/4, it means 1/4 of, not 1/4 of the actual value, 1/4 of what you paid is what we're talking about over here. So whatever that price was, let's say if the land is originally worth $500, so Rav Holtz's secret kin is going to sell it for $400, which is a 25% of the total value, basically in terms of the payment, but it's only 20% of the total value, which was $500. So you got it for $400. We call that a 25% discount, but it's really 20% discount from the entire price. You can pay that to him, or you can give him land of that value, but you're not going to give him a quarter of the original land because that would be overpaying. He's only, basically, if you're going to give him back the original land, you give him back 20%, a fifth of the original land. Whereas Shmuel says, no, you give him a quarter of the land. I mean, it doesn't have to be that limit. You give him a quarter of the land that you were talking about over here, which is one third of the purchase price, because when it said a quarter, it meant a quarter of the value of the land. That's what he let you off. So you only paid actually three sections like that, and that's what he gave you off. So what are they arguing about? So obviously this question. Shmuel holds Mar Sovin Echeir V'Yazovin. He took off 25% from the actual value of the land. Whereas Mar Sava Rav holds that a Sikrikon sells for 20% less than the actual value of the land, and that's 25% we're talking about of the total. Fine. Meisvei. Zu Mishnah Rishona. So now the Brisa and the Mishnah, almost the same Lashon, Zu Mishnah Rishona. But Bezdin Shel Achareihem Amru Halokeach Min HaSikrikon Noten LeBa'alim Revia. And the owner has the greater legal rights. Yad ha'ba'alim al ha'elyona. If the owner wants his land, rotzo b'karka notlin, rotzo b'mo'ot notlin. So basically, he can tell you, look, you know, this is my land. I want the land, 25% of the land, and that's what we're talking about. So the yad ha'ba'alim is al ha'elyona, ematai. But when do we say that he can actually, meaning when do we say Sikrikon? This is only where the owner himself, during those 12 months, did not have money. If he has 12, in those times, Yeshbi Yonon Likach, he could come and buy out anybody else. This was before Rebbe, there wasn't 12 months, there was just at any time. Whereas Rebbe was Moshe V'Bezdin, because people were not willing to get involved in this and then have the guy come 5 years later and insist that now they have the money, they want to buy it. So Rebbe was Moshe V'Bezdin, and he said, we give a guy 12 months. If nothing took place for 12 months and then you go buy it, first guy to buy it gets a right to keep it, but he's got to pay the Baalim either a Revia Bekarka or a Revia Bemos. So it's Mashma, one quarter of the money is talking about one quarter of what he paid. But what he paid was already discounted. So then it's not like Shmuel, because Shmuel said he pays one quarter of the land value. Amar Rav Ashi, that means one quarter of the total. Ki tanya ila acha shebo ma'ot liyado. That means, what's the total amount? The total amount is what you pay to the Sikrikon plus what you pay to the owner, right? So then that's what the land is worth. So when it says a quarter, it means a quarter of the land's actual value, which is exactly what Shmuel was saying. Okay, we'll continue the actual very interesting story where Rav was actually counting the votes in the Beis Din. He was there when Rebbe made this takana, so we'll see some fascinating issues tomorrow. But meanwhile, once again, we've moved back to the main sugya over here, which is the Tikkun Olam. The Tikkun Olam that we're referring to over here is the Tikkun of Sikrikon, and we've seen where it applies, under what type of threat it applies, how it relates to the question of Taina, how that question of Taina relates to the Din of Taina on Nechosim of Shalei Shanim, of Chazakah. And we've also learned the machlokas about how we figure the 25% that's paid, whether it's from the payment to the Sikrikon or whether it's from the actual value. To be continued, Bezrat Hashem, if we're Zocha, to meet again tomorrow. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol Tov, Bisrot Tovot. No more thinking about Nazis for a couple of days. Whew. It's not easy. These are very, very difficult sugyas to learn. You know, I mean, you understand that to people who didn't grow up during the war or in families that had actually suffered these kinds of sufferings, these things sound like they're so distant. for any Holocaust survivor family, this stuff is as close as your childhood. So, you know, these are not stories from out of the distant past. Go to everyone.